Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Our first guest is the author of a new book that is full of wonderful stories about the ordinary and yet quite extraordinary people of our state. Steve Hanna with us by phone today, former managing editor of the Milwaukee Journal. He was a longtime CEO of The Onion, which must have been a trip in and of itself. And you may remember him most from his syndicated newspaper column. I certainly do. It was called A State of Mind. And his new book is taken from a bit from those columns, and we're going to talk with him about the columns. And the book also talks about his life as well. And as we visit with him, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments for Steve. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Steve Hanna, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Larry. I just tuned in when you said prior to the news, if you were a friend of Steve, you may have been a fan of Steve's longtime column, State of Mind, and I immediately screamed, yes, I was, in fact. I was a huge fan. In fact, some weeks I thought I was the only fan.
Well, I tell you what, here, you know, I read your column, and I always enjoyed it, and your book comes, and so I thought, oh, Steve's got a book. All right. So I opened it up. I just opened it. And I opened it to the front page of the story titled Nearly Naked, Seeking Snow. And so I started reading it, and pretty soon I'm laughing. And I share an office with Jill Nadeau, my producer. And so she's, what are you reading? And so I'm trying to read this to her. And I was laughing so hard I was crying.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry to hear that, Larry. I didn't mean to have that effect on you.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, then today she says, oh, and I love this that story about, who was it? I'm trying to remember his name now. The guy that had the newspaper column. Oh, the Herman
Trondrud.
Trondrud.
Yes, the Norwegian, he wasn't a bachelor farmer, but he was a Norwegian farmer.
Well, and so then she starts laughing as she's trying to read what she was talking about, this guy sitting on Herman's head. And, and then we got laughing a bit more, and then, you know, we talked about it, and I said, you know, I had some tears, too, in my eyes when I read Bo Knows, and she said, well, I have too. And so I'm telling you, laugh and then a few tears. It's a wonderful book. Thank you so much for putting it together.
Well, you're welcome. It was a pleasure and a labor of love. Believe me, I've written thousands of things for publication over the years, but I never wrote a book. I got derailed running The Onion for all those years.
Yeah,
and I thought to myself, you know, someday I'm gonna write this book. I'm gonna put down these adventures with Steve, and my kids are gonna have it on the shelf on their bookshelves, and they're gonna pick it up, and they're gonna say, "So that's what the old man was doing." We wondered where he was.
Well, I hope about a million people at least who are from Wisconsin, or even, wouldn't have to be from Wisconsin for sure, get a chance to read your book because it's wonderful. And you've got a great story. I tell you, your own story, which you kind of weave through the book. I mean, you're a New Jersey guy to begin with.
Let's not tell everybody that right away. It's kind of hard to live down.
But you wound up in the Midwest.
Yeah, I was actually, I had gone to school out east in New York, and I grew up really in the shadow of the Empire State Building, and, you know, I was a bi-coastal guy. I figured there were two places that were suitable to live in the world, and one was New York, of course, which is called the city, not New York City. If you live there, it's just the city, and the other was Los Angeles, and I had been to L.A. after graduating as from Colgate University in New York, and I was on my way to Ireland, actually. I'll try to explain that. I took the summer and went out to L.A., and I sold newspapers on Fisherman's Wharf, which I thought, this is my calling for sure. And I met a woman out there, and we had a how can I say this politely?
Flame?
We had a really nice time together. And and then I was headed back to Ireland to go to graduate school in Dublin. And when I came back from Ireland, prematurely, because I spent all my money and spent much too much time in the pubs and much too little time in the classroom, I was headed back to L.A. and I got detoured, stopped in Chicago. And the first night I was there, I met a woman from this strange and mysterious place called Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I had to get a map out to figure out where I was. And I said, it's nice to meet you, but I'm leaving for L.A. tomorrow. And I never made it. I married that woman.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Here you are 43 or 4 or 5 years later.
Yep. Still hanging around. And it's the most beautiful place in the world. I was just telling your producer that I was out on my pier about 15 minutes ago. And it's a gorgeous sunny day. And there are 3 or 4 lucky fishermen out there subtracting most of the walleyes that I intended to take this afternoon. So I just I fell in love with Wisconsin. That's about. And I managed to find work. Yes, my mother used to say all the time, "When are you coming home?" And I'd say, "Well, this is beautiful out here." And she said, "They don't even have a good cable," which was really her litmus test for whether or not a place was civilized. So they got a lot of other things, she said, but the cable, it's just very mediocre.
Well, you got out here and you wrote a letter every day, I think, or every week at least, to the Milwaukee Journal for about a year before they finally hired you.
I did. It was a tough sell, given my personality. But I went down and interviewed, and this was the post Watergate time, and so Woodward and Bernstein were heroes, and it was tough to get a job in journalism. And I had read that the Milwaukee Journal was one of the top 10 newspapers in the country. So I started to what they called at the time, string for them, write freelance articles. And then I got in the car one day and drove down to Milwaukee and was interviewed, and I was not given much encouragement. So I launched a one-man campaign to get a job, and I would write letters to the editor, managing editor at the time, a guy named Joe Schoquist, and I'd write him in the third person and recommend myself for jobs. I'd say, "This guy, Steve Hanna, is if you met him, I think you'd really like him. He's a wonderful guy, and he's a credit to his family and could be to the state of Wisconsin."
Well, you know, and that sort of sets up the first sort of section of this wonderful book that you've written, called Dairylandia. You have a section called The Accidental Agriculturalist.
Yes. Yes. Well, I when I was freelancing for the Milwaukee Journal and also for the Capital Times, and at the time the editor of the Cap Times was a guy named Elliot Marinus. You probably remember Elliot.
Oh yeah.
So Elliot would throw a few bones my way, and one day he said, "Why don't you write a story about a farmer who," he said, "the situation they find themselves in is that they're getting paid less for 100 pounds of milk than it costs to produce it." And I said, "Well, that doesn't sound right." And I happened to be coming out to my place. I was renting on Lake Wisconsin. And I stopped at the NFO, National Farmers Organization office.
Yeah.
And I walked in and I said, "I'm Steve Hanna," tried to sound very important and knowledgeable. And I think they saw through that really quickly. And they recommended a farmer up in Lake Delton, before Lake Delton became completely and utterly covered with Kalahari and Five Guys and Culver's, etc. And Craig Culver's a friend of mine, so I don't want to offend him. But it was a farm then, and they were extraordinarily nice to me. And I wrote the story, and then the Journal called one day and said, "We've got a job for you." And I figured it would be hard-hitting crime reporter, which is what I'd done in New Jersey before I got out here. And they said, "We think you'd make a fine farm reporter." And I said, "I don't know the front end of a cow from the back end." And I did work in the supermarket during high school, so I know where the milk and cottage cheese go, but that's about the extent of it. But they quickly pointed out that their audience was largely urban and that it would be my job to learn about agriculture. And frankly, Larry, I needed the money.
Yeah,
I needed the job.
Yeah.
So I said, what else comes along with it? And they said, well, you get a new car every 3,000 miles. And my car was burning a lot of oil. And I said, man, you got yourself a new farm reporter. I'm just perfectly suited for this. And as I said, my dad, who wasn't impressed with my behavior as a teenager, and justifiably so, when I told him what I was doing, he said, well, you know nothing about agriculture. And he said, you know, I've always told you, you are an ignoramus of the first order. And then where you get the nerve to even take this job is beyond me. And I said, I think I learned it from you, Dad. And it turned out to be, other than writing the column, which was not too different from it, it turned out to be just the greatest job I ever had. I drove around Wisconsin in that new car, and I met, I covered farmers who were dumping milk, and I spent a year with a farm family so I could learn what I was doing, covered forest fires, mass murders, and thought I had really, I was the greatest thing since pockets on shirts.
And you've got some wonderful examples of, wonderful stories that you wrote as part of your time as an accidental agriculturalist. But you really like working with people from Wisconsin are a little different from people, let's say, on either coast.
That's a polite way of putting it, yes.
I mean, you talk about the fact that they are they don't base their happiness on the happiness of their neighbors or their coworkers.
No, I grew up in a place that was I'd say society was very aggressive. It was very important to get ahead in the world. Where you went to school was enormously important. It wasn't necessarily what you knew. It's just, were you getting ahead in the world? And, you know, it's kind of a cliche about the East Coast, but I found it to be utterly true. And then later in my career, particularly when I was with The Onion and we were doing television shows in Hollywood, I spent a lot of time in Hollywood, and I was always so happy to come back to Wisconsin. I really was, because people seemed relatively normal to me. You know, I have a story in the book, and thanks for reading it, too. Incidentally, I was interviewed by a guy the other day, and he asked me a bunch of questions, and I said, you know, I'm not too far from you. I could drop off a book if you'd like. And he said, I don't really have any time to read.
I read every word.
Oh, well, you're a good guy. But when I was writing a column, I remember I went out to visit my mother in New Jersey, the lady who was devoted to cable, and we were watching television before dinner one night, and there was a guy on TV from New Jersey who had won $10,000 in the New Jersey lottery, and he was talking about how he was kind of entitled to the money, and he was proud that he won it. And he said, everybody in the neighborhood knows that I'm the guy with the luck, and I'm respected for this. And I thought, boy, this guy's sort of full of himself. And then I remembered that I'd grown up there, and if I'd stayed, I'd probably be exactly the same way. And then I came back to Wisconsin, and I read that up in Fond du Lac, there was a strip of convenience stores. I can't remember what street it was on. We'll call it Main Street. And during the course of a month, three different people had won millions of dollars. I think the one guy won $1 million.
One guy
I remember
million.
Won $10 million, and another guy won $100 million. And I first interviewed the guy who won $10 million. Now, mind you, just having listened to this guy who won $10,000 and pronounced himself a great man in New Jersey, and I said to the guy who won $10 million, you know, what do you intend to do with this? And he looked at me and scratched his head and said, I'd like to buy one of those KitchenAid blenders. And I said, and he said, yeah, I like to cook. That's pretty much what I'm going to do. And then I met the guy who was a junior high school teacher, and he won $100 million. And I said, in true Barbara Walters fashion, how does it feel to have $100 million? And he looked at me and he said, not too bad. And, you know, I said in the book that I'm sure he took the family to Ponderosa that night, but he wasn't really talking it up. And to me, that was the contrast between Wisconsin and New Jersey. It was, it's kind of like what John Irving once said in the Cider House Rules. He said, in Maine, it was a good thing to know something, but not necessarily to talk about it.
Steve Hanna, our guest today, his new book is called Dairylandia, Dispatches from a State of Mind. Join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe you read Steve's column, or maybe you have just some questions about his writing. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. On air producer today, Stephanie Hoff, engineer Nigel O'Shea. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Steve Hanna. He is the author of the book we're talking about. It's Dairylandia, Dispatches from a State of Mind. And it's so much fun to talk with him. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I have so many questions for you about this book, Steve, but you know what? I should back up a little. I'm not so sure I've given a fair description of what your book is all about, so maybe you could describe your book for us.
That's much too difficult for me, actually. I mean, it's really the story of a guy from New Jersey who is, I'd say, full of himself, and ends up, takes a detour, ends up in this place called Wisconsin, fully expects to stay here a year, maybe two at most, and ends up here for 43 years because he falls in love with the place and he falls in love with the people. And this is my home.
Yeah.
And it's populated with all kinds of characters, from Herman Tronrud, the Norwegian farmer you mentioned, to the oldest living, she's now deceased, newspaper columnist who named Emma Washa, who wrote for the Dodgeville Chronicle. And I went to see Emma one day, and she looked at me and she said, "Before we get started, Sonny boy," and by this time I'd been managing editor of the Milwaukee Journal for years, and she said, "I suggest you try not to be boring when you write." She said, "There's enough boring stuff out there already. There's no need for you to add to it." There actually are a lot of people who are older in the book, and that comes from the very first job I had when I got out of college was at CBS News in New York.
Charles Kuralt.
I worked with Charles Kuralt, and one day my boss told me that if I kept my nose clean and I watched who was coming up behind me, because that was very much the culture at CBS News, that someday I'd be a network news producer. And I said, "A man as pretty as I am ought to be on television. I mean, can't you see this?" And Kuralt took me aside and said, "You know, if you want to have a job like mine someday, you're going to have to learn something about journalism, and they're never going to teach it here. If you look around the newsroom, everybody here has come from a newspaper, so you better go out and get a newspaper job." And the other thing I learned from Kuralt, of course, was that old people were fascinating. And I was in the Madison Bureau of the Journal, and I read in the newspaper one day that Kuralt was coming to the UW Union to speak. And I called him and said, "Let's have lunch." And he put on a masterful performance. And afterwards, a guy from Wisconsin Public Radio, come to think of it, said to me, "Do you mind if I go to lunch with you guys?" And I said, "Of course." And we went to lunch at the old Brat House on State Street, which I think is gone now. And Kuralt said, "I'll have one of those fancy hot dogs," which
was
called a brat. And I could tell that this guy from public radio was dying to ask him a question as we caught up on news about and gossip about people that I used to work with. He was still working with them. And the guy said, "You know, Mr. Kuralt, if I could ask you just one thing, all these stories that you tell are about old people." He said, "What is it with old people? You know, you don't write anything about young people." And Kuralt said, "No, that's easy to answer." He said, old people are interesting, and young people, say, like you, for example, are not. You know, when you get older, you might be interesting, but today you're not. You don't know that much. You get old, you know much, and also, as he told me a number of times, old folks are unfiltered, and you'll get the truth from them. And so I had a there are a disproportionate number of stories, and I think there's stories that have a fair amount of wisdom in them, not from me, mind you, but from them, from older people who whether they were the greatest frog catcher known to man from Oconto or a rattlesnake hunter named Woodrow Wilson Roberts, who took me hunting down in Barneveld and Arena and kept convincing me that I was a boy. I was in my 40s then. He said, "You're a boy who could learn to love snakes." And I said, "I'm scared to death of snakes, Woody." And he said, "Yeah, but I can recognize a boy who could learn to love snakes. And you're that boy."
As you were standing near a little cave with a whole bunch of rattlesnakes.
Yeah, and he said, "You know, they're back behind the frost line there." And he said, "I just feel so terrible." He said, "Because I can't get him to get out and perform for you." And I said, "I feel pretty safe, Woody, actually. This is as close as I'm happy to get." Although one day I did go to his house another time to go hunting with him, and he had four or five on the lawn. And he was just fussing around with them. Unfortunately, he got bit. Not that day. But he was med-flighted down to the University of Wisconsin. And for the rest of his life, he had one normal-sized arm and one the size of Popeye's. And he kept saying to me, "I just give you one piece of advice." He said, "I'll take you hunting, but don't get bit. And if you get bit, don't come running to me, because I told you." Unfortunately, I didn't get bit.
Mike in Wauwatosa has something for us, so let's go there. Mike, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I was wondering, for an author, how do you determine when you have something where you go, "This is a really good idea" versus "This is a really good idea"? No, it's a terrible idea. I'm still going to pursue it.
Oh, how do you determine that? I mean, in the case of so much that fills this book, the sort of beating heart of the book are these columns that I wrote for years. So honestly, ones that got a really resounding and positive reaction told me that these were good stories to include, and they all fit in. They also fit into the structure of the book. But I suggest that if you have a good story to tell, you tell it to your significant other or your kids, and if they think it's funny, then use it, and if they think it stinks, then I'd put it aside.
There you go, Mike. Betty in New London. Hi, Betty.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering if Steve is going to be doing a book tour. I love local story. I love to read Michael Perry with his local Wisconsin stories and things. But I would like to know if Steve is going to be doing a tour, and where can I get the book?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, actually. So you can the book is available I think Friday was the first day.
Yeah.
The official day publication is the 15th, but it's available on Amazon. If you just go on there and search Steve Hanna, Dairylandia, I think you'll be able to get it, and I suggest you buy 10 or 20 for your closest friends. And yes, I'm going to be doing a book tour. You said you're in New London.
Yes.
Trying to think. Yeah. I'm going to be, I think the closest place I get to you is Appleton. How far is that from you?
Oh, that's not far. Half hour, maybe.
Yeah, I'm at the bookstore in Appleton, I believe. Geez, I'd really have to look it up. I'll tell you what, if you go to the University of Wisconsin Press website and you punch in Dairylandia, they have a list of the places where I'm appearing. So I'm going to be, everywhere from Spring Green to Arcadia to Madison to Milwaukee to Sheboygan to all kinds of places. And the bookstore is the one that comes to mind. I'll be in Wausau. So you can find it there, because it's more reliable than my memory at this moment.
And every local bookstore is going to have copies.
Yes, I meant to mention that. I was actually at the independent booksellers convention in Cleveland last week, and I met lots and lots of indie bookstore owners from Wisconsin and Illinois and Minnesota, lots from Michigan, and they'll all have the book too.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love the local bookstores. They're fun. They're wonderful places.
And they're just not bookstores. They are places to go and find your soul for an afternoon.
Yep, absolutely. Betty, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ron in East Troy will give you a chance. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I was wondering if I could get your guest take on the difference between Wisconsin in general, and if you go north of, depending on who you talk to, either Highway 29 or Highway 8 and up north Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm trying to, let's see if I can make a distinction there. I mean, you know, physically you can draw a distinction, of course. I think the entire state of Wisconsin is beautiful. I spent a lot of time up north. I think up north is a little more rugged. I mean that in the most complimentary way. I think it's breathtakingly beautiful in a different way. I think the people are independent, frankly. There's a story. I'm thinking of a guy. I was up in, I think it was Phillips one night. I got a call from a guy who was reading my column somewhere, and he said, "I've got something you've never seen before." And I said, "Well, there are many things I've never seen before." I drove up there, and he took out this little bellows contraption, and he said, "This, you put a hard-boiled egg in this thing, and then you push down as hard as you can, and the intact hard-boiled egg comes out of the shelf." And to me, that had a lot to do with the personalities. This guy said, "I'm going to make $1 million off this." And he and I, by the end of the night, we had littered his kitchen floor with dozens of eggs. And I found lots of really interesting characters in northern Wisconsin. And I think it's a gorgeous place where, I mean, the air is so clean. I sent my kids up to camp for years in Boulder Junction, and it was the highlight of my year was just to make that trip up there and smell those piney forests. And I thought, this is God's country.
There were Ron, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, you can join in too with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Steve Hanna, our guest today, author of Dairylandia, Dispatches from a State of Mind, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. John from Racine wondered if you ever did any articles on hemp farming or the dairy crisis in Wisconsin. John was a dairy farmer who started hemp farming.
Well, I certainly wrote lots of articles over the years during that accidental agriculturist period about farmers. And, you know, it now, you know, I keep track of what's happening. And I think I read the other day that 500 family farms had disappeared in this year alone. I think I've got that number pretty close. So I've done lots and lots of stories about dairy farms and dairy farmers, and I think it's a tragedy, frankly. I think it's so part and parcel of the fabric of this state. Good, hardworking people with great values. I learned a ton from them, frankly. I know absolutely nothing about hemp farming, and if you'd asked me about marijuana, I would have denied it completely. So.
Okay.
There may have been a time or two in college, but who remembers?
Yeah, who remembers?
But the farm business, I spent years learning about agriculture, and I spent a lot of time on farms, and it's some of the fondest memories of my life. And as I said earlier in the interview, I spent an entire year, so to speak, with a farm family just to get an education, and the surviving members are still good friends of mine today. So.
Yeah, Katie and Earhart Schultz, wasn't it?
Yep, Katie and Earhart. And unfortunately, I think one son is left in farming, and the 400 acres they had up in Lake Delton, 300 are sold off. And as I said earlier, you know, you can see Panera, and the actual farmhouse sits right on a spot where the Hampton Inn lies today.
As I look through your, as I read your book, here's how I, when I read a book for the show, I read the book and then I have a few envelopes from, you know, mail that I read, junk mail or whatever that I've received, and I make notes on the on them as I'm reading. And you had sections, the accidental agriculturalist, you had a section on ageless, the dark side of paradise. Not quite plum.
Yeah.
Which was where the nearly naked seeking snow story came. Animals, yes, people know. And your lucky day. And I enjoyed every single one of them.
You're very kind.
The not quite plum, the where you write about nearly naked seeking snow.
Larry, you're not going to leave this subject, are you, until you get to the bottom of it?
I tell you, I laughed so hard.
Yeah.
It was just, and you should probably just sort of outline that, the basics of the story.
Yeah, well, this is the kind of story that absolutely appealed to me. It was a story that I can't remember how I came across it. I may have mentioned in the chapter. It's probably, you know, a two-paragraph newspaper brief. But it was a story about a young and, let's call her resourceful, woman in northern Wisconsin. And she devised a way to make money. She would go to bars, and she'd find some sucker. I can say that today. Yeah. And she would say, we ought to get to know each other better. And maybe we could retire to a motel somewhere. And so she'd seduce these guys. And these are guys who all had a couple things in common. One, they all owned pickup trucks. Two, they were all inebriated. And three, they were kind of stupid. And so she would drive them out towards the motel, and she'd say, you know, something that I like to do a lot is that I like a guy to get down to his underwear and then run out and get a big pile of snow, like over there, you silly goose, you know, next to the tree. And then you bring it back to the cab of the pickup truck, and then I rub it all over you. And this is really just one of the kinky things I like to do. And these dumb gentlemen actually dropped their trousers and shirts, and they ran out into the snow, and they gathered up a handful of snow to bring back to this lady in the pickup truck. But, you know, you can guess the end of this. By the time they got back to the truck, she was long gone with their pants and their wallets. And I don't know where these guys got the nerve to actually go to the police station. Happened two nights in a row up in Wisconsin Rapids. And they reported that this woman had run off with not only their car and their wallets, but by God, they'd taken their pants as well. So you notice that I did not have the heart. I did name the woman, frankly, and I followed up last year and found out what had become of the case, which was kind of interesting, actually, because she got involved in another case and finally turned state's evidence and so kind of got off the hook. But I put these guys in the Wisconsin Lovers Hall of Fame. So.
Well, the way you wrote that is classic Steve Hanna, I think.
Probably so. I ought to grow up someday.
Tom and Tomahawk will let you join in. Hi, Tom.
Well, I want some advice on how I can get a group of people to write a memoir about northern Wisconsin. I have my wife and her seven siblings, who now stretch from the early 70s to the 80s. We get together, and they tell these incredible stories about growing up on this farm in northern Wisconsin that was god-awful place that went bankrupt three times. The only thing I can come up with is maybe putting all on tape, you know, interviewing them. Any thoughts on that?
I think that's a great idea, frankly. I'd sit them down. I think we all wish we'd done this with our parents too. But I'd sit them down and, I might have an adult beverage. That's usually a pretty good lubricant for telling stories. And I would record it all. And then I think what you need to do is probably find somebody who is a professional, who's an editor, who could go through it, sift through it, organize it. But honestly, the story that Larry referred to before about Herman Tronrud, Herman was, you know, when I met Herman, he was 88 years of age, and he just had retired from farming, and he said, I'm just going to tell stories about my my life and livelihood. And they were fascinating stories. And, you know, as I said in the book, I worked professionally with, I think, the greatest comedy writers I've ever known at The Onion, and they worked so hard at their craft, whereas Herman Tronrud simply told a story as it came to mind. The first story he told me may have come from 1922, the next one from 1994. Herman had no structure whatsoever. He just said, I'm going to tell you a story. He told a story about one day when he said, I remember one day when the Evans boy, I can't remember if that's his name, but it's close, got a dry bean stuck up his nose. And I'd never really heard that before. And he said, so we got in the car. We couldn't get it out. So we got in the car and we were driving along and we went to a gas station in Reeve, Wisconsin. And the guy said, where are you headed? And he said, well, you know, Jimmy here's got a dry bean stuck up his nose. And the guy said, well, I can take care of that. And so he took a coat hanger and he turned it five different ways and stuck it up and pulled the bean out. And Herman said to me with an entirely straight face, that's what we call a full-service gas station. But you probably have wonderful stories to tell. You just need to collect them. And you probably ought to get some help if none of you have ever done this before. You can find a good editor. To help you out. Incidentally, I wanted to put a plug in. Mike Perry wrote the foreword to the book. Yeah. And I thought he captured it. I'd never thought of myself. I thought of myself as an interloper, but I never thought of myself as the perpetual newcomer, and I think he nailed it. So I'm grateful to Mike. And later I thought I could have named it something like Lives of the Perpetual Newcomer, which just sounds more like a Danielle Steele title, but nevertheless.
Yeah, he said something like, your stories, you infuse these tales with a palpable sense of discovery, marvel, and wonder. And you do that every single time.
Well, I come from a family of storytellers. We're Irish, so it's endemic. And I come from particularly the influence of my mother. My mother could answer the telephone. She'd get on the phone. She'd suddenly come back to the kitchen. She'd get her cup of tea. She'd get her pack of unfiltered Pall Malls, which eventually killed her, unfortunately. She'd sit on in the pantry and talk to somebody for 45 minutes. She'd get off the phone, and we'd say, who was it? And she'd say, wrong number. And I'd say, wrong number. What are you doing on the phone for 40? She said, well, oh, my God. You know, her husband works in New York City, and he's an alcoholic. Her son's in drug rehab, her sister. And she'd know the entire history of this family. And she'd say to me, you know, the most interesting thing in the world is an individual story. And, Steve, you don't have to travel to Timbuktu to get it. She was trying to get me to stay home where I'd get good cable, I suspect.
Well, Steve, your stories are absolutely wonderful. I had so much fun reading Dairylandia, and I hope you sell a million copies.
Well, Larry, if you can only see yourself clear to taking 100,000, I think we'll be on the way. I want to say, though, before we part company, that I've listened to I almost said at the outset, long-time listener, first-time caller. I've listened to your show for 30 years, and I love it. It's a thrill to be on your show, and it's entertaining, and it's like Wisconsin. It's extraordinarily civilized. How's that?
Well, on that note, thank you, Steve. And
my pleasure.
It's been a pleasure too. I hope we have a chance to talk again. I really enjoyed this conversation, and we didn't get through. We haven't talked about animals Yes, people not so much. That story about Bo knows, well, people are just going to have to get a copy of the book and read it, I guess.
I guess they can. So the local bookstore will have it, and they can find it today. Yesterday, actually, I was thrilled to see it was on Amazon. Amazon Prime will deliver it in a day, and they had a little parenthetical note there that said, only five left in stock, hurry. And I was thinking, did I buy that many? Anyway, it's been a pleasure talking to you. This has been fun.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it very much.
Okay, Larry. Take care now.
Take care. Steve Hanna, author of well, I don't know how many thousands of stories, but his book is called Dairylandia, Dispatches from a State of Mind. And if you love Wisconsin and the people of the state, you're going to find some wonderful stories about the people and some about the animals, too, of the state. Steve said he wrote some pieces that he thought were absolutely wonderful, but the most comments he ever got from any stories were when he wrote about animals. Then he'd get hundreds of letters anytime he mentioned an animal. Well, let's turn our attention to we're going to stay on Wisconsin right now. Theater. We're going to talk a little bit about theater, a different way of entertaining and communicating from what Steve has, but a lot of fun. Nevertheless, our next two guests, both Equity actors, have a show called A Dairy Tale, and we'll talk about that next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.